This is the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. I'm Amy Marshall. Have you ever had an uncanny experience? The sensation of your hackles going up around a particular person or place, for instance, or an inexplicably vivid dream in which you could see yourself sleeping that made you wonder if claims about the reality of supernatural forces and out-of-body experiences have any validity? Robert Bruce doesn't need to wonder. Since the age of three, his encounters with astral planes and psychic forces have left him with no doubt about the presence of unseen beings. An Australian mystic, healer, clairvoyant, and author of several books that are considered classics in the field, including Astral Dynamics, a worldwide bestseller published by local company Hampton Roads Publishing, Bruce spoke at Quest Bookshop this week, kicking off a 5-day workshop on energy and consciousness at the University of Virginia's Continuing Education Center. In this interview, he describes what he has learned through many years of experimentation and hands-on research, offering practical instructions as to how normal people can protect themselves from negative energies. For someone who would know nothing about astral projection, or thinks they know nothing about astral projection, why would someone want to do it or to learn how? And I know that you also have a book that guides people to how to have an out-of-body experience. Why?
Everybody projects out of body naturally every night, every time you sleep. An astral projection is a part of the sleep process. Normally, during sleep, the astral body is released, it floats gently out of the body and hovers just above the body, mimicking the sleeping position. Now, this is normally. Sometimes people become conscious during the astral projection, and they may experience life in the astral planes, various levels there are. Now, as this is happening naturally anyway, and it has a natural purpose to it, it is a small step to experiencing it in the conscious state. If you do it consciously, you can induce an astral projection. You can travel in the world, the real-time world, very much like you'd imagine a ghost to be. You can walk through walls, you're invisible, and you can fly around like Superman. The laws of physics do not apply to you. It's a really fun thing to do, especially in the daytime. Now, you can also explore the astral planes, interact with spiritual beings, spirits, spirit masters, even see angelic beings and things like that. And the astral planes are like a collection of, you could say in a basic way, they're like different universes, complex, interesting places, bearing no resemblance to the physical world at all. And they're interesting places to explore. And and this is all a part of stepping out into the greater reality beyond the physical.
When you said there was a natural purpose, to what were you referring?
The purpose of astral projection, I think, is tied in with the, you could say, the meaning of life, the mechanics of how life works. And it's not just humans that project out of body every night. Animals also project out. I've watched dogs and cats at least exit their bodies and fly around in the astral. I've often seen my cats and dogs astral projecting with my children, because often I'll be meditating, and when I meditate I'll develop clairvoyance, astral sight, and I can see into the astral dimension, and or see my children and pets flying around having fun, and you know, just like kids and dogs and cats would normally do. But the natural purpose is, I think, a clue exists in two parts. One by the scientific paper written by James T. Spottiswoode, who discovered that at, they did a very big significant piece of research, that at 1330 sidereal time, there is a cosmic event every day which affects the whole world. And sidereal time is astronomical time, which is different to our calendar time. So sidereal time tends to move through our time. Sidereal time is measures the exact rotation of the Earth And this way, scientists can, astronomers can, predict exactly where planets and star systems will be at any given time. But at 13:30 sidereal time, which is 1:30 p.m. Sidereal, there is a cosmic event occurs exactly the same time every day, which causes a 450 to 500% increase in the hit rate of remote viewing ESP type experiments. And that's a significant increase. It only occurs for 1 hour per day. And the other part of the equation is the, by the way, that is has to be a cosmic event. It's nothing local in the solar system because of the predictable time every day when the our planet faces in a particular direction. You could say it experiences this cosmic event, which causes a big increase in psychic abilities. Now, the other part of it is in the astral wind phenomenon, as I explained in my book, Astral Dynamics. The at times during the day, which I think relates to the sidereal time thing, 13:30, the there is a wind that blows in the astral, and you only notice it if you're in the astral projecting consciously. And a number of other authors in the field have noticed this, including Robert Monroe, Carlos Castaneda, Silver Muldoon. And what happens is you'll be projecting out of your body, floating around in real time, and you will feel a force pulling on you, and it grows in strength. It feels like a strong wind, but it's not like a howling gale, but it gets stronger and stronger and eventually blows you out of the house or up into the air at about a 45 degree angle. And as you are passing through the cloud layer, you will momentarily black out. And you will regain consciousness coming down at the same angle, and you will be deposited back, usually back from where you came from. Now, but not always when you came from. You may be deposited down a year in the future, and you may see people and places you have never seen before, people you've never met but will meet. You may also be deposited a few hundred years in the past. And what appears to be happening is, this is the theory of mine, the at this particular time every day, there is like a pulse goes through the universe which, in a way, sucks in all astral projectors. People who are asleep, out of their body, are sucked in. Happens very, very quickly. And in a way, you could say their thoughts and actions are processed against everybody else's. It's like a giant computer that processes. This may have something to do with reincarnation and karma, as whereby, you know, if you do something bad will happen to you, sort of thing. It's not a complete theory, but it's likely that something like that is involved. And I think that's the nearest anybody's ever come to putting a natural purpose on to astral projection.
Do you ever run into people who want to learn how to have an astral projection experience because they're wanting something out of it that's either, I can imagine people would think, oh, if I get to meet spirits, I can meet dead people, relatives, or, oh, I can gain power or anything like that.
Yeah, you mean they can gain knowledge and take unfair advantage of people? Yeah, things like that. Use it for unethical purposes. There is, there are people like that who come across them, but usually, you know, the astral has a way of taking care of itself because the actions you do in real life or in the astral dimension have consequences just like they do down here. And even though there are no like set rules in the astral, it's a completely uninhibited place. If you use the astral for unethical purposes, you tend to attract unsavory characters to you in the astral, including negative entities and things like that. So these things have a way of fixing themselves usually. And it's quite difficult to actually learn how to induce an astral projection, so you'd have to be really keen to do that, And it's not an exact science either, so it's something you need to it's a great experience. You can spiritually learn a lot from it, but it's not a predictable thing to use. One of the things is because of the in the real-time dimension after only a few minutes in the astral real-time zone. And I define real-time as being the level of the astral dimension which is in or very close to the physical dimension. It's like physical reality as reality happens, or i.e. real-time zone. So, yeah, it's the biggest difficulty there is that after a few minutes in the astral real-time zone, everything starts to morph. It starts to fluctuate. And the if you look at something, for example, for more than a couple of seconds, it will tend to distort. It'll change into something else. I call it the Alice in Wonderland effect. So it's not a reliable tool for retrieving accurate information from the real world.
You were a very small child the first time you had an out-of-body experience. Could you describe what that was like? If I mean, I'm assuming you remember it fairly clearly, and also thinking of people who possibly would have no idea what that would feel like, or maybe they've had experiences and didn't know they were what they were.
Yeah, I started having spontaneous astral projections, out-of-body experiences, they're also called, around the age of 3 or 4 years of age, and my first memory of that is I remember buzzing and all over and floating out of the bed and floating through the house feet first as if my bed was moving through it, and completely spontaneous. I wasn't controlling it, and I floated through the house, down the stairs, and for a few minutes, and then found myself back in my body. And the next night something similar happened again, and over the months this happened quite a lot, and I learned how to get around in the astral, which is not as easy as you'd think. There are a few things that affect you moving around, and I learned how to move around, how to fly, how to pass through solid matter. Had a lot of fun as a kid. I
mean, you weren't scared at all?
No, I wasn't scared. I remember running down the road, flapping my arms like a bird, trying to get airborne like Superman, and it worked. It actually helps you fly. But if you stop concentrating on the flying action, you tend to float back down to Earth again. And that's caused by, there's no gravity in the astral, but that's caused by what I call the gravity habit, which is a lifelong habit of being pulled down 24/7 by gravity. You get so used to it that it becomes like a part of you, and you expect it subconsciously. And I had a lot of fun doing that, and after a while of doing that, I learned how to precipitate an astral projection. I didn't use any technique, but I'd lay there in bed thinking about how cool it was the night before, or getting out of body, and I'd think about wanting to come out, and then I'd just find myself out of body. I'd buzz a little bit and be out. It was very smooth. And this continued on and off for many years until I was in my early 20s, and then I sat down and had to teach myself how to induce an astral projection, which is a whole different ball game as an adult than as a child, because I mean, everything is easy as a child, especially in spiritual metaphysical things, and they're more difficult as an adult.
Did you ever get any sleep, or what do you actually, does the body get rest while you're gallivanting in the astral plane, or?
Yes, it does. when you astral project, normally the physical body is in a sleep state, falls asleep, and you project out of your body. And the moment, it doesn't always fall asleep, though, it can remain awake. But when the your astral body is generated and separates from you, there is something I call the mind split occurs. Now, you can remain awake and focused and conscious in the astral body, in your physical body, mind, I should say, while you're also aware and active in the astral dimension. And the mind split means there are actually two of you functioning at the same time. Now, this proves that the original copy of your mind and memory and your spirit never leave your physical body while you live, but an energy copy is generated and projected. And also at the time, keep in mind that the dream mind can also become active, which in effect makes three copies of you operating simultaneously. And yeah, so it's a bit complex. It's provable through the experience of it that this is what's happening. And but your physical body does rest. It's at the very least in an a tranced or altered state of consciousness, and which it means the mind is awake but the body is asleep. So you do rest, but your mind, especially your astral mind, doesn't have to rest really.
So what happened to you growing up, and how did you get to the point where now you're an author who's traveling the world giving workshops? What happened, and how did you become what you are today?
Mainly self-educated. I lived a pretty normal life. I had lots of amazing experiences, spiritual experiences, including astral experiences. And I eventually decided to write a book about it. And the book got published. I met my publisher here, Frank DeMarco of Hampton Roads, Virginia, Charlottesville. I met him on the internet accidentally, and he's very interested in astral projection, so I accidentally met him. I answered a letter from somebody else, a forward, and accidentally replied to him. We got talking, and I mentioned I had a manuscript ready, and he was interested in looking at it, and next it was published, and Astral Dynamics is the bestseller in this field internationally. My second book I wrote a year later, called Practical Psychic Self-Defense. That's also a bestseller in its field. And my latest book, Mastering Astral Projection, I co-authored with Brian Mercer of Washington, D.C. And that is also selling really well, with a different publisher. That's with Llewellyn Worldwide Publishing Company in Minnesota, USA. And I've just sold another one to Hampton Roads, which is called Foundations of Energy Work, which is all the energy work I teach put into one book.
And that's what you're teaching this week in Charlottesville, the workshop? Is that mainly in energy?
Energy work is the foundation of what I teach. There's a new system of energy work I call New Energy Ways, based on tactile imaging, the sense of touch, moving the sense of touch through the body. It's extremely effective. It's the most effective and simplest system in existence today. It can take me a couple of minutes to teach anyone the basics of it. I've taught 5-year-olds and 80-year-olds the basics of it, and it's very powerful. It works. Now, all my techniques are based upon the energy work, or stemming from the energy work. The workshops I do here, currently doing one at Charlottesville, 5-day workshop for my publishers, it teaches a lot of what I teach, the energy work, the astral projection. I also teach an energy healing method. I teach clairvoyance. I teach psychic self-defense. Lots of things, how to see auras, and there's quite a grab bag of stuff. And what I teach depends on the length of the workshop, of course. I'll teach less in a 2-day one. I focus on the basics, but a longer one, like a 5 or 7-day one, I teach a lot more. And we do a lot of actual practice. Probably 30% of my workshops are practical, where I'm talking people through exercises and things, yeah.
You call yourself a mystic? And I think a lot of people might think of the word mystic and think of historical saints or people who have had visions. And I was wondering if you could explain your definition.
Well, people always want to put labels on you, and rather than being mislabeled, people ask me what I am. I am a mystic, and a mystic is one, it's a person who approaches the greater reality, the greater spiritual reality, through personal experience. Rather than opposed to the teachings of somebody else. And as a mystic, I also believe that you are God, you and all your listeners, and everybody has within them an aspect of God, of universal consciousness. Call it whatever you like, whatever your term for God is, or universal consciousness, the collective consciousness. But we are all a part of that, and at a deeper level below the surface, we are all a part of one another. And and my beliefs are based upon that.
Are you part of a religion, or were you ever part of any religious practice?
No, barring a brief involvement with the Salvation Army band when I was 12. that explored my musical talents, which are pretty non-existent. on a trumpet. I'm pretty much self-educated. I am not associated with any religious group or religious organisation at all. I work alone, and I have friends that help, but I'm very scientific in my approach, apart from being a mystic. I mean, I have deeply spiritual beliefs about life and the greater reality, but I'm also very scientific in my approach, which is a fairly unique thing. Yeah.
You mentioned the other day when you were talking about the Practical Psychic Self-Defense book, how you believe this book should be given to every elementary school. I was reading the introduction to that book, and you were talking about how children are so more susceptible to negative energy and other kinds of interference just because they're children and they're younger and have less protection. I was wondering if you could give an example of an experience you had with a child who was being affected or attacked by something and how you dealt with it.
My book, Practical Psychic Self-Defense, is a practical guide to defending yourself, not only against psychic attack from other humans, but also from astral entities, non-physical, inorganic beings, negative entities, and the whole gamut. And whether you choose or not to believe in them or not, they do exist, and they really trouble children, especially between the ages of 3 and 5. When there's they are most active in a child's life, and children are more susceptible because they have young, unformed minds, and a lot of these entities that attach to them are hereditary, coming down through family lines from parent to child, yeah, under the 99th generation, but I have switched my focus to helping children many years ago. I also help adults, but children are easy to help because if you can stop the attachments being made from negative entities at an early age, then children grow up to be better people. And that's the easy time. But once something is entrenched over many, many years, it's very difficult to remove it from an adult because it often involves major behavioural or lifestyle changes, and which is difficult to do with an adult, whereas it's quite easy with a child to modify their environment, their diet, and things for them. I've also learned certain weaknesses because I've experienced a lot of attacks myself, and the negative type beings that plague mankind are in essence two-dimensional beings bound to the surface of the earth, and they cannot cross running water unaided. They also have other weaknesses, and one of my biggest countermeasures, and there's various ways of using it, is to use running water. And I've helped many children under attack, the youngest probably 9 months of age, pre-language age. And the proof is in the pudding, as they say. An example, helped a child 9 months of age that came under, we suspected, strong psychic attack because the house was experiencing poltergeist phenomenon and lots of disturbances. So the child was screaming, high temperature, very, very tense, little fists bunched up. And to test it, I picked the child up, walked it outside, put a hose on the ground, gushing running water, garden hose, and I paddled the child through it. The instant the child crossed the running water, it went limp, and it was goo goo gaga, and the child was asleep before I got back into the house. And I went back by an alternative route, because it's possible that when you cross running water, the entity could be waiting the other side of the running water. So you go back, it will, you know, get you again. It's like a dog biting you that you can't see. And I've done this hundreds of times with adults and children when an attack has been in progress, and I walk them over running water, the attack breaks instantly. Plus attacks I've had on myself. And the volume of water is important. If a garden hose won't break an attack, a water main, the main water mains that line civilization or towns are also handy for breaking attacks like that. There's something related to that that happens to a lot of parents. The mystery maladies that occur at night. Hospitals are inundated often with parents bringing in perfectly healthy children, which they claim were seriously ill, 20 or 30 minutes beforehand. And what happens, being a parent myself and knowing a lot of other parents and helping them, is a child will come under an influence or an attack which causes symptoms like an illness, including high fever, I mean up to fitting level, pain, and the child could be screaming in pain, high temperature. I mean, any parent will grab the child and race to hospital. But what happens when you get in the car, you drive down the road, you're crossing water main after water main, you're crossing streams, you're crossing a lot of running water. So 5 minutes later, you've got a perfectly healthy child sitting in the back of the car playing. And this is very, very common. Nobody can explain it. But that, this, what I'm telling you does explain it. It's predictable. So I suggest people, before you jump into the car, take the child over a water main or a garden hose first on the way to the car. And if the child wakes up and is suddenly fine, then, you know, re-examine the need to go to hospital.
Thinking about children, I had a friend who, when he was really small, had an imaginary friend. To him, it was actually a real entity. It was a person in his house, and he knew when his birthday was and had his mother make a birthday cake for him and things like that. Is it possible that sometimes when children are having imaginary friends or seeing monsters and things like that, that there's some actuality to it? Or is that, how would you even know, I guess, with a kid, or can you?
Well, that's a compound question there.
It is.
First of all, some imaginary friends of children are real spirit entities. Some are psychological. Some are imaginary. They're not real. I'd need more information on a particular case to tell the difference. The imaginary ones, of course, are quite harmless. Some of the other type, which are real, can be an earthbound type spirit. It may or may not be a child. It could also be any one of a number of other spirits pretending to be a child because it wants to associate with a human being. Depending on the... You can usually tell from these things if it's having a negative effect on the child, causing behavioural problems, lack of sleep, disturbances and that, then you've got a problem that needs to be dealt with, and you'll need my book, Practical Psychic Self-Defense, which you can start applying immediately. You don't need any training for these things. For example, apart from the running water, 95% of household entity problems can be solved by fumigating the house with sulphur or red hot chili peppers and black mustard seeds. You fumigate the house, then you air the house out, and then you burn sweet essential oils to make the house smell really pretty, and you'll find that the bad smells, the strong smells, like you ever burn hot chili peppers, it's a vicious smoke. Sage can also be used. It's not as effective as chili peppers and black mustard seeds, or as effective as sulfur, which is poisonous, so you'll be careful using it. And full instructions for this are in my book, but if you fumigate the house out, that destroys negative energies. And then you burn sweet essential oils and incense in the house. That attracts in good spiritual energies, which when they build up in the house feels happy, develops a positive atmosphere, which repels negative energies. So it's a good countermeasure.
Have you ever had an experience where you were daunted or it wasn't as easy to get rid of a negative energy?
Yes, definitely. And this is part of the reason why I've focused on children a lot, because you can help them more. I have people I've been working with for 2 or 3 years with serious problems. I'm talking full demonic possession, which is a higher level type possession. And some problems like that are so enmeshed in a person's psyche, they're very difficult to remove. I can help a person survive. I can help them improve. And if they work with me and make the lifestyle changes necessary, living a clean, healthy life in all ways, basically, the person will improve, and up to the point where they can, the entity will fall away. And I think if you look at these things, you've got intelligent negative entities we can't see. You also got animalistic, insect-type ones, very much like the animal life in this planet. You've got astral mosquitoes, snakes, spiders, scorpions, things which can be dangerous sometimes. Or you've also got things like leeches and ticks that sort of attach to people. The higher types, are much more difficult to remove, but they still can't be removed in the early stages using my methods. Even I've often helped people with full-blown entity, even demonic attack, and using enough running water and the correct methods combining it with some energy work as well, and you can break just about any attack in the early stages. In fact, I have not come across a case that could not be broken using sufficient quantities of running water.
Interesting. I know my parents were Christians, and of course I was always taught if something happened to banish things in the name of Jesus Christ, and I know a friend of mine who had a bad experience and tried that and it didn't work.
Yeah, that's a good point. Any religion has some kind of demonology or some kind of belief in banishment of spirits, but just saying the words out of a book or repeating banishing them in the name of some deity or god or whatever won't guarantee that it will work. It's like an exorcist. I mean, I work as an exorcist, sometimes a healer and an exorcist. You could repeat the same thing that I do and have zero results. It's a healer or an exorcist that can do this sort of work is a very special type of person. They're very strong, very grounded, and they have an ability to function in the face of a great fear, because these entities generate a lot of fear. Really scary stuff. And you also need, the essential ingredient is a tremendous faith in God and in life, unshakable. If you have any doubt about your faith in God at all, you shouldn't even be thinking about going near this sort of stuff. But in the case of the average person, when the method you believe in doesn't work, like banishing in the name of whatever religion, doesn't work, then you need my book. There is nothing in my book whatsoever that could possibly offend any religion or any belief. It is using things like running water, fumigations. These are scientific things. You're affecting the environment. The principle is that any negative entity that affects or interacts with or attaches to a human being's energy body is a very delicate, subtle energy type reaction. Now, because it's so subtle, if you change the environment but using running water, change it, it tends to earth these things, grounds them out of existence. Fumigation and that changes the atmosphere. You can also use essential oils, perfumes and things to change the atmosphere. There's lots of other things. I don't even know the half of it yet. I'm still exploring different things. But if you, just change the atmosphere. And especially if you come under attack, leave the house, leave the area. These things do not travel well. They can't run after you usually, especially if you cross running water. So you can leave them behind and get away from them. If your method fails, whatever it is, or your beliefs fail you, then get my book. It will help you.
This is Amy Marshall with the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, speaking with author Robert Bruce about the psychic phenomena which are the focus of his writings, workshops, and his life. Robert Bruce will visit the Casey Foundation in Virginia Beach later this month and then return to England for another conference before heading back to Australia to rest before starting yet another tour.